Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, responding to the AIDS crisis, the African Jesuit AIDS Network marks 5 years of activity amongst individuals and communities affected by the HIV virus. And finding sanctuary in our frenetic lives. Find out why a Benedictine abbot has become a best-selling author. Welcome to the programme. What do a 16th century Jesuit saint and a Congolese midwife murdered in 1964 have in common? The answer is they're both patrons of a network of religious in Africa dedicated to caring for those affected by HIV and AIDS. The African Jesuit AIDS Network, or AJAN, was set up in June 2002 by the Jesuit superiors of Africa and Madagascar, encouraging religious to accompany those living with HIV/AIDS and to develop a holistic response appropriate for the different local circumstances. The daily work of the organisation is entrusted to the protection of Saint Aloysius Gonzaga, a 16th century Jesuit who gave his life caring for victims of a deadly plague. The other patron of the network is Blessed Anuarite Nengapeta, a young sister of the Holy Family who worked as a midwife and was murdered for resisting the sexual demands of a rebel leader in Congo in 1964. As the network marked its 5th anniversary, a new report showed the organisation is resourceful, responsive and making more credible the Church's presence on the African continent. The coordinator of AJAN is Jesuit Father Michael Cherney. He told me what he sees as the main achievements of the past 5 years.
The achievement is also central to our mission, and that was to encourage and assist Jesuits in the nearly 30 countries we were in throughout Africa to respond to HIV and AIDS in a coordinated and evangelical and efficient manner. And I think the basic success is that there are quite a few more Jesuits doing that, and they're doing it in a very interesting variety of ways.
They're working throughout the whole range of ministries, aren't they? They're working in healthcare, education, prevention, support groups for families and so on. Tell us a bit about the most important areas.
Well, I think since AIDS is turning out to be such a complex reality, it really touches every dimension of human life. It's in that sense, it seems more complex, more dense than other sicknesses. Well, then the response also has to be very broad, very pluralistic. And so we haven't chosen one particular thing to do. On the contrary, we try to encourage Jesuits to respond wherever they are and whatever they're already doing. So that, for example, a Jesuit with talent in music has written songs and recorded them and done a DVD, and that's his way of promoting awareness. And I think it's marvelous, even if at first glance you might not think that music has anything to offer in the fight against AIDS.
But it's very much in Africa the way the message is being spread, isn't it, at grassroots level? Perhaps more key than anything else, through theatre, through dance.
That's right. It's, in a sense, taking AIDS out of the narrowly medical field and helping people to see that it is, sad to say, part of life, and that one has to deal with it throughout one's life. And since it's not going to go away probably in the next few years, people will be born and live and die with AIDS as part of their reality, and this will happen for generations. So we need to learn to live with it and to fight it in every way possible.
As you say, you see generations, you see children being born with AIDS, the parents dying of AIDS in their most productive years. Have there been moments over these past 5 years when you really felt you were just fighting too big a battle?
The biggest danger, this might sound a bit unscientific, but the biggest danger is to pay too much attention to the statistics. The statistics are overwhelming because there are zeros and zeros and zeros. But if you a focus on the people who are around you, the people whom you are reaching or trying to reach, the people whom you're with, then it's, again, it's like life. It's, this is what these people face, and if you can be of help, you want to be. And in that sense, it's not discouraging. We can overcome AIDS. We can learn to live with it in the sense that to avoid getting it, or if people have it, to help them to live as well as possible. And finally, it takes its place amongst the whole range of problems that exist in Africa.
Can you give us some individual stories that perhaps have given you the most hope in this sense over these past years?
Well, I think the most moving stories, even though they, in a certain sense, they don't seem to have a happy ending, I think the most moving stories are those of young Jesuits who accompany people in their last hours or days, sometimes very young people, and who, I think, give them a great deal of hope and of consolation and of peace so that they can finally close their eyes in peace. But the young Jesuits and then the people whom they talk to also receive much grace about life, the real meaning of life, the mystery of life, and finally our responsibility for life.
Are you saying that this disease in a way is helping to develop a kind of spirituality, even a kind of theology perhaps, that is quite new?
Some theologians in Africa are daring to call AIDS a kairos. And kairos is an ambiguous term. It's a moment of challenge and opportunity. Kairos is a time that you can win or lose. You can miss it or you can get hold of it. Well, then AIDS is a kairos. And yes, when the church does try to respond, one can sometimes see that here there are dimensions of response which are really renewing the church, renewing parish life, renewing the life of a school, because they're dealing with reality in a very deep way. And they're dealing with it as each person needs to deal with it. Because AIDS, although the figures are large and the numbers are overwhelming, each person has a very individual, very personal experience of it. And the church, thank God, deals with people as they are, each one, son or daughter of God, and not as part of a massive statistic.
One of the difficulties has been, alongside these huge numbers that seem unstoppable so often, the problem of fear and stigma and inability really to talk about these issues. Would you say that this perhaps has been one of the most positive things over recent years? Has been a change in attitude?
There's a modest change in attitude. There are some people who are less afraid to speak, and there are some people who are less afraid to listen. And there are many people who I think stigmatize or are traumatized just as much as they ever were. So it's a bit early to say that the battle over stigma is over, as if we've now learned to live with this or to speak with it about it, and that now we are dealing with other things. No. The fight against stigma, the fight for acceptance, the fight so that people can live, even if infected, can live positively for as many years as God still gives them, the fight against stigma is still front and center. And that's why we're happy to publish books or to help produce videos or music, because these cultural media are the way in which stigma is overcome. You can't overcome it by accusing people of stigmatizing or denouncing them for stigmatizing. That doesn't help. It's like fighting racism by denouncing it. It usually doesn't help. You have to help people to break through and to discover the humanity behind the false image.
So small grassroots initiatives perhaps are more important then than government leaders or indeed church leaders actually talking more openly about these problems.
I wouldn't want to say more important, and I wouldn't want to discourage any leader, ecclesial or political, from speaking out. They should do it. But I agree with you with what you imply, that finally people are probably going to deal with this humanly and spiritually by good example, by peer-to-peer. You know, friends of yours can help you much more than your president or your archbishop, I think. And that's so everybody needs to help. And that's maybe also part of the very ecclesial nature of this struggle.
Would you say that when you first arrived on the scene 5 years ago, the church was often accused of not responding in time, not responding properly to this, trying to hide it as if it didn't exist? Would you agree with that?
I mean, it's true that the accusations were there, and it's true, as in most accusations, that there's some element of truth, or there are some examples. But what often happens is that the negative criticism takes the headline and the spotlight. For instance, one unhappy sermon where somebody accused people with HIV of being sinners and so forth, that wipes out 10 or 50 or 100 wonderful examples of people who are dealing with this in a very human and Christian way. So let's say that the media have been, as maybe happens in other cases or other issues too, it takes a lot of effort to get the media to see the whole picture and not just the sensational part. And I think since as Christians we are immersed in a media world, part of our work is also in the media area, in the communication area, to help to give a full picture. And that full picture has still a lot of sin in it, a lot of very unhappy and regrettable things, and it has marvelous, marvelous stories that need to be heard of good people doing good things for others, and yes, being brother and sister to each other.
This media image continues to be a huge problem, though, doesn't it, to you in the fight, particularly in this crucial area of prevention and the church being accused of not being sensitive enough to the problems of prevention.
I mean, as a media problem, the way you've just described it, I think you've articulated the Western version of it. In other words, the image, I think, is, as you say, in Europe and in North America and so on. In Africa, it's not so. It doesn't seem to be a big media fight about anything. In some ways, AIDS is still quite absent from the public sphere. There are other problems which take up much more attention. And the fight against AIDS is also not in the public sphere. The real fight is in the neighborhoods, around the churches and mosques, and where people gather and where people deal with their real problems in a human way. That's where AIDS is really, where the fight is being fought. And in that sense, I don't want to say that the media is irrelevant, but it's not the hot issue that it might look like from here.
You mentioned mosques alongside the churches. How much are you able to work together with other religious leaders of different churches and different faiths?
I think it's probably like every issue. If you asked me the same question about promoting peace or about fighting poverty, I think I would say to you, yes, there are some Catholic leaders, some other Christian leaders, some Muslim leaders, and others who do get together and do work together, and there are many who don't. And I think it's the same in AIDS. So there is some cooperation. I'm not particularly up to date on it, so it's not an important part of what I do, but, or of our experience so far in the African Jesuit AIDS Network. But that's partly because we're just starting. We're only 5 years old, and we're beginning with the Society of Jesus, and maybe interreligious relationships will develop in the future.
One of the criticisms, though, is that there are many congregations, many religious organizations working on this, and yet there's very little coordination, even within the Catholic world, that in fact resources and ideas and personnel are being wasted because of this lack of or willingness to coordinate with other people.
Maybe. Yes, there is a lot of waste, and but I wouldn't begin by criticizing the church for that, because the church receives so little that she doesn't have much to waste. You know, other people are getting a lot more money, and I think are wasting a lot more money than the church does. And you know, if you agree that AIDS is there are many people involved, but that it's a very personal issue. Finally, I ask myself, well, what difference would a whole lot of coordination make? If we're trying to deal with our people in our neighborhood and you're dealing with your people in your neighborhood, Yes, I mean, if it's a question of setting up a clinic, maybe one clinic will do for the two. But beyond that, it's one-to-one or one. These are small groups, and that's where the really good work is done.
One of the other key specific issues there in Africa, of course, is the poverty and the lack of development, which plays a key role on the continent rather than perhaps AIDS as it's seen in our Western societies, isn't it?
Well, now it's a question of from what angle you want to look at the reality and finally at the problem. And you can say that AIDS is the lens that helps you to understand poverty, or you can say that poverty is the lens that helps you to go to the roots of AIDS. It comes a bit to the same. AIDS is part of life. I think that's the central message, and it needs repeating because AIDS keeps getting shoved off to the side so that because we don't want to deal with it. So AIDS is part of life, and life in Africa is made more shorter and unhappier and far more difficult because of the terrible poverty. And there's no doubt that if our human development index would go up by 10 points, if I see such a thing, our AIDS would come down by 10 points. In that sense, there is definitely a very close relationship. But they're not the same thing, and some people need to work on AIDS, and it's very important. And more people, and especially people internationally, must work on poverty. And if we could have some solutions on poverty, we wouldn't have to worry so much about the medicines or other specifically AIDS-related things, because the better standard of living would help enormously. That's the single most important thing to fight AIDS, is that people should be able to eat properly, have work, go to school, be properly housed, have clean water. It's the basic menu or the basic shopping list of what Africa needs.
You mentioned medicines, and of course there has been progress with these antiretrovirals being made available at much, much cheaper prices. How much difference has that made then?
It has made a great difference in the area of stigma. I think that before, if you tried to convince someone to get an HIV test, and the real only result of that test is knowing that he or she was going to die, let's say they weren't too motivated to get tested. Whereas if today the motivation for getting the test is that when necessary there will be some medical aid, obviously that's so. I would say that the ARVs have helped to reduce stigma and have helped to promote a kind of healthier or more open attitude towards HIV. On the other hand, it's worth remembering that at any one time in any one country, only 10 or 15% of those who have HIV are eligible to take the medicines. It's either too early or too late, or for other reasons they cannot take them. So 85% of the people or 90% of the people who are HIV positive are not, ARVs is not the solution for them at that time. I think our place in the church most of the time is to work with the 85%. The 15%, if they can get the ARVs, God bless them, and thank God that somebody is providing them. But it's not the only thing, and I might dare say it's maybe not even the most important thing.
What do you see really as the priorities as you're looking forward to the next 5 years?
I would say in some way to carry on. What we have done well a few times, we have to do well many, many more times. If there's one parish that has a good home-based care program, every parish should have a good home-based care program. And probably we've not reached 10% yet on average, you know. Every school should have a very good program for its students. Every marriage preparation course should deal sensibly with HIV. Every parish should have programs to support young couples to remain HIV-free or to have AIDS-free families. Every university should have good courses on HIV. Well, there's just an enormous amount to do. So even if we don't come up with something very new during the next 5 or 10 years, just carrying on doing what we've learned so far would probably be a good contribution. But I'm hopeful that we will discover new things to do too, because there's a lot of creativity. And as I say, AIDS is part of life, and we are here to work for life. And so I'm sure we will find good things to do in the next few years too.
My thanks
thanks there to Father Michael Czerny, coordinator of the African Jesuit AIDS Network, with music by Jesuit Father Wilfred Sumani. And if you'd like to know more about the organisation, you can find them at www.jesuitaids.net. Five steps for finding sanctuary. Five phrases for easy meditation. And how to apply ancient monastic wisdom to our whirlwind modern lives. In a nutshell, that's what you'll get if you pick up a copy of Finding Sanctuary by Abbot Christopher Jamieson, head of the Benedictine community at Worth Abbey in the south of England. And if that name sounds familiar, well, so it should, because he's the man who featured in the TV show The Monastery, watched by over 3 million viewers when it was first broadcast on BBC Two in May 2005. The three-part programme followed five ordinary men who spent 40 days inside the monastery, living alongside the monks and learning about the Benedictine spirituality which shapes their daily lives. It was so popular that a follow-up programme has since been produced, together with a similar show tracking four women's experiences in a Poor Clare's convent nearby. Father Christopher's book, meanwhile, has become something of a bestseller, snapped up by people with no apparent interest in religion and no contact with any Christian church. So what's the secret of his success? Or is he selling out the faith, as some fear, by simply cashing in on public interest in New Age spirituality?
Look, the basic expectation is that we now live in a society where most people say, I'm not religious. But the good news is that they usually preface it by saying, or they usually add to that, but I am spiritual. And we have to start to show how religion is at the service of spirituality without an agenda, but rather we have a religious offering to feed the spiritual life of the spiritual people of this country.
With that key concept in mind, Father Christopher helped set up a website to cope with the huge interest sparked by the monastery TV programmes, and then set about writing a book to make the monastic tradition more accessible to non-religious readers.
The book was a result of an invitation from the excellent publisher, Weidenfeld & Nicholson. They began rather charmingly by saying, look, we don't normally publish religious books, although we did publish the works of the late Pope John Paul II, which was rather encouraging. But they said, we feel there is a space in the market here for a book coming through secular outlets, which is actually a religious book. And this was really very interesting and returns to the earlier theme. They felt that the market was saturated with the new spirituality movements, with new age therapies, with all of that. We all know about that stuff, so to speak. But they felt the monastery showed that actually those same people who buy those books are now open to classic religious insights. They no longer have to be coming from a new age source. And therefore they asked me to write a book from the classic Catholic monastic tradition, which might speak to the situation of people today. And they said, please begin with where people are today, and then show how the monastic tradition can enrich their spiritual lives and guide them on a path through that, as you did the people in the monastery. So I was thrilled to do that, and I learned a great deal about how to conduct this dialogue by an excellent editorial team who helped me to realise when I was using language that would not be accessible, and who helped me to understand what was going to be understood and what wasn't going to be understood. And that has been a great learning curve for me. When I'd finished the book, I was concerned by the question you asked earlier, have I actually dumbed down the tradition in some way? I was concerned about that. And so I sent it to a fellow abbot who is an incredibly able man who I've known for many, many years, in fact knew him since I was we were both lay students together, and said to him, have I been faithful to the tradition? And he said, oh, yes, he said, I want to read this book out in my refectory for all the monks to hear. It would do them good. So I was really encouraged by that.
So who would you personally say the book is aimed at? I mean, is it more for the monks in their monasteries, or is it more for people, is it also for people who know nothing about religious life, or indeed the church?
It's specifically aimed for lay people, not for religious or priests, and it's specifically aimed for non-religious lay people. It is clearly directed towards the person who says, I'm not religious, but I am spiritual. That's the focus. Those are the people who've been buying it. I discovered that it's now being sold in W.H. Smith because people have been going into W.H. Smith, which is, people need to know, is our standard high street news agents here in Britain, and asking for the book. You know, that's the kind of popularity it's had.
With all this new media interest, where do you find time to keep up the running of the community at Worth as well, I wonder?
Well, one of the things I've discovered about the media is that, funnily enough, the media is not something that's deeply intrusive into the monastic life. Provided you treat the media with respect, they treat you with respect. And I say to them, well, I'll see you next week. It's not like a news agenda. If you had a big news agenda running, then it does become more complex and you're under pressure. But when you, in a sense, have a message to communicate, which they're interested in hearing, then I negotiate and say, well, I can do it next week, but not this week. And a small TV camera crew is not particularly intrusive. If we can reach 3 million people through the presence of a production team of two, then, you know, that's a pretty good ratio. It's a way of communicating the gospel through the monastic tradition in an unobtrusive way.
I've seen your approach sometimes described as Benedict Light. I mean, have you had criticism, serious criticism, from people who think that perhaps you're taking a too modern, if we can call it, approach to the faith, that there is a risk inherent in this kind of dialogue with the modern world?
I think there's two responses to that. The first one is, I think it's only Benedict Light if it's read quickly. I think if the book is read slowly and at depth, then the whole of the tradition is implicitly present within it. And that's why I was encouraged by the response of other monks to the book. Secondly, the accusation of selling the tradition short is one that is usually made of those who succeed in engaging a new audience. I think the Bible is full of such examples, including our Lord himself, who got into great trouble with those who said he seemed to be selling the tradition short.
Future projects? Do you have anything in the offing after such a successful past year?
Well, the BBC are very engaged now in a whole new raft of religious broadcasting. They believe that the monastery represents a turning point in religious broadcasting in this country. They're talking about taking the book, Finding Sanctuary, Monastic Steps for Everyday Life, and seeing what happens when they give that book to ordinary people out there and filming their attempt to live out those steps in their day-to-day life and making that into a new documentary. I think that could be a fascinating project.
Abbot Christopher, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Philip.
Father Christopher Jamieson is abbot of the Benedictine community at Worth Abbey, where the monastery TV programmes were made, and author of Finding Sanctuary, Monastic Steps for Everyday Life. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.